Numbers chapter 1, I looked last week at this thought of Abel to go forth to war. We are looking at the book of Numbers. It is a book that where they numbered the people of Israel. There's a census taken at the beginning. There's one taken close to the end where they counted the men, and there was a criteria that they were using to determine or to decide how to count and who to count. I mentioned last time, they're getting ready to go through some wilderness. They know that. They're getting ready to go into the promised land. They know that. There's going to be some battles. There's going to be some building. There's going to be a lot of things involved. So what was the criteria I mentioned? Maybe someone that could build houses. They surely would need houses. There's no doubt. There were some buildings and structures in the promised land already, but they needed to build their own or redo those. What about being a good daddy? That surely would be important. A good father's important no matter what, or a good husband, or maybe a good lawyer or a good doctor. There's a lot of things that could be good criteria in counting these men. But we find in verse 3, in fact, let's go start in verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tabernacle of the congregation on the first day of the second month in the second year after they were come out of the land of Egypt, saying, take ye the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel after their families by the house of their fathers with the number of their names, every male by their poles. Notice what he uses for the criteria, who's to be counted. From 20 years old and upward, here it is. Not the builders or the good husbands or the good daddies or the lawyers or the doctors, even though all those were needed. But he was to count those that all that are able to go forth to war in Israel. He is counting the people who can fight the battle. And the reason is because there were battles ahead. There were the battles in the promised land. There were those who lived in the promised land. They weren't going to easily give up their homes, their dwellings. There was going to be a fight. Remember I said last week, God waited until the judgment of those people who were living in the promised land came to fullness. And then he used his people to judge those people who were living in sin. God works it all out. He always does. But the criteria is those that's going to be able to fight. We find that in verse 3. We find it in verse 20, 22, 24, 26, 28, 30, 32, 34, 36, 38, 40, 42, and 45. Those words, be able to go forth to war. I think the Lord was serious about this. He says there's a battle ahead. There's going to be the battle in the promised land, but you're going to have some battles before you get there. There's going to be some things you have to face. I mentioned last week, I'll say it maybe one time this week, he was saying you're going to have to put your big boy pants on. You're going to have to grow up and you're going to have to act like adults. Now, there's no doubt that God was at work in all this. And everything from the wilderness journey into the promised land, we can see the hand of God. But I mentioned last week the priority involved and the people involved and the power involved. And I finally got to my message now. What in the world are these people going to do? They are facing the unknown. They don't know what's ahead. We're living in those days now, where the uncertainty is probably that makes it worse. If you know there's a problem ahead and you know what it is, you can kind of brace for it and plan for it. But when there's problems ahead that you don't know when or where or what, it's hard to plan. So what are these people to do? I want to mention first, they needed to acknowledge God's promise. You see, they were the promised people going to the promised land. They were not just someone who had no heritage or no background. God had promised to these people the promised land. That's why it's called promise. I guess you got that. back in Genesis, you don't have to turn 22 verse 17, that in blessings, this is God saying this to his people, the same people that we find here, their granddaddies and grandpapas and grandmamas, and that in blessing I will bless thee, in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore. Notice, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. God had promised there's going to be battles. I do not promise no battles, but I do promise victory. I am the God who will bless you. I'll bless you to multiply you, but I also will bless you to take care of you. Another promise we find in Genesis 15, 18, where God said, unto thy seed have I given this land. He said, I have already given it to you. It is as good as done. Has it happened yet? No. Will it come easily? No. Will it be just a breeze through the park walking? No. It'll be difficult. There'll be battles. But I want to tell you, I promise you, says God, I have already given you the land. I'm talking this morning about these people in Numbers. They're going to battles. But those battles God had promised, I'm going with you, and I have already given you victory. Another promise we find in Exodus 23, verse 31. God says, the God who never lies, I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand. God is numbering people here, and the criteria he has is this: who is going to be able to go and fight? Who are the ones that will stand and not run, or at least would be able to? And the reason they can be assured that everything's going to be all right in spite of the battles is the fact that God had promised them, I'm going to take care of it. No matter what's ahead, I've already told you, it's going to be okay. So I ask you, should they have been, no, don't answer this question, okay, because I'm kind of setting you up. I warned you beforehand. Should they have been afraid? Yes. Because they were going into danger. And they could not take it lightly. They could not take it frivolously. So should they have been afraid? Yes. But should they have been afraid? No, because God had already said, in spite of the danger, in spite of the difficulty, in spite of the unknown, I have promised you it's going to be okay. I will give you victory. And this morning, that same God has promised us to take care of us. And we can trust Him no matter what. Amen. Amen. Thank you. I'm talking this morning about what are they going to do? They needed to acknowledge God's promise. But I think secondly, they needed to appreciate God's provision. I mean, listen, God has already taken care of them in so many ways. Now, they're about to go into a place and go through a place and experience something they've never experienced before, and so are we today. But all they had to do is look back at what God had already done and said, if he did it then, he'll do it now. If he did it yesterday, he can do it today. If he took care of me back there, he's going to take care of me up there. I'm talking this morning about being able to go to war, being able to face what we're facing without being defeated, without being discouraged. They needed to acknowledge God's promise. He's promised us we can trust Him. And they needed to appreciate God's provision. God in so many ways provided for them in the wilderness journey. Before they ever got to the battles of the promised land, before they ever got to the Jordan that they had to have a miracle to get across, before they ever had to fight those battles that is surely ahead, God was providing for them in the wilderness. 3 days into the journey, they ran out of water. They're in a desert. There's 2 million of them. They have their livestock. They have little babies. They have old grandmas and grandpas. Everybody's thirsty and there is no water. And they find some water, but it's bitter. And listen, God said to Moses, take a tree, cut it down, throw it in the water, and the water became pure and they were drinking it. I'm talking about God provided that. The God who could do that can take care of my enemies that's ahead. I'm talking about they should have appreciated God's provision. Later on, they got hungry. I'm talking about they were in a wilderness. There was no McDonald's. There wasn't even a Harris Teeter. There was no way to provide what they needed, but God did. He sent manna. Every day, all they had to do is go out and gather it and eat it. Later on, he provided quail. I'm talking about God provided. Later on again, they ran out of water. And God said to Moses, take your rod and strike a rock. Well, excuse me, what good's that going to do? I'll tell you what it'll do. It is enough to provide water for them all. Later on, even in anger, Moses struck it twice and God in mercy provided water. I'm talking about God is providing for them when they cannot provide for themselves. He is taking care of them. Can you imagine being in a desert and there's no water, there's no food, there's no meat? It wasn't just some little bump in the road. It was major. But God took care of it. And what they should have done when they got to the promised land was look back at what God had already done. And they should have appreciated God's provision. But wait a minute, we better not look at them. What about looking at us? How many times has God taken care of you in an impossible situation? At the right time, like the ladies just sang, he came through in a miraculous way. He did that in your yesterday. He can do that in your today and your tomorrow. We need to appreciate God's provision and thank him for what he's already done. I want to say to them, look back, dummy, and see what he did. But I got to say the same thing to me. We worry and fret about what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, what about what happened yesterday that he took care of? The God of yesterday is the same God of today and tomorrow. He'll take care of us no matter what we need, no matter what happens. He even took care of their shoes and their clothes. Hey, by the way, none of them got sick. In 40 years of traveling, 2 million people closely confined, none of them ever even got the measles or the mumps or the chicken pox or the cold or the coronavirus. I'm talking about God is providing for them all the way, and he is for us. He's taking care of us. I am safe thus far because of the grace of God and how he's provided for me. I'm talking this morning about being able to go forth to war. There's a battle ahead when they go to the promised land. In order to be successful when they face that battle, they needed to acknowledge God's promise, appreciate God's provision. I think number three, they needed to accept God's plan. This was not just them stumbling blindlessly through the wilderness. The word wonder is in the Bible. And there's no doubt there seems to be no direction to their travel going through the wilderness. I mean, listen, it was approximately 20,000 square miles. In 40 years, they would have accidentally gotten out of the desert. Except for one thing, God made sure they didn't. He was leading them every step of the way. Pillar of fire by night and cloud by day. He led the people of Israel and the Levites and the ark, and they followed where God said go. So I'm saying this morning, God had a plan. He had a plan, and he's initiating his plan. Now, I don't know what all he's doing, and neither did they. I mean, listen, remember, there's 11 days' journey from where they were to where they were going, and it took 40 years. So what in the world is God doing? Well, I don't know. And you don't either. And sometimes I say in my life and yours, what in the world are you doing, God? And I don't know. And neither do you. But He does. He does. He has a plan. He has a divine, specific, perfect plan for our lives. He knows what He's doing, and His plan is better than my plan. But I do ask this, do we trust Him? It's vitally important that we trust Him and acknowledge His plan and accept His plan as being the best thing for us. I tell you one thing, without doing that, there is no hope. You try traveling through the wilderness, 2 million people, with no provision of your own and no direction of your own without God. See how it goes. Now listen, they could have gone back to Egypt. They could have just left and said, I'm going to the city. I'm going to town. I've had enough of this wilderness. They could have. But in leaving the wilderness and going to the city, going to town, whether it's Egypt or any other town where there was water and food and a place to stay, by leaving the wilderness, they would be leaving God's will. Because God's will, listen to me, God's will for them was that they be in the wilderness. He's leading them somewhere, but they ain't there yet. And He has a direct and specific and precise plan from where they're at to where they're going. And the best thing they can do is appreciate, accept, trust God's plan and say, Lord, have your will. Now, what's God's plan for your life? Where's He got you at right now? You say, right now I feel like I'm in the wilderness. I feel like I don't even know which way's up. I feel like I have no control. Hallelujah for that if that's where you're at. Because we need to realize if I control it, I'm going to mess up. If I decide I'm going to blow it, I need to trust Him. I need to accept His plan as being not just a good thing or even a better thing, but the best thing. He was working in their lives every step of the way. Now, they were resisting and fighting and making it worse, and so do we. But He still, God stuck to His plan. And He said, I am going to do something with you if it kills you. And some of it did. He said, I have a plan. And His plan was the best. I do know one part of His plan. It says in Deuteronomy 29:6, ye have not eaten. I'm working on a message, the have not God. We talk about the God that has what we need and gives what we need. But this verse says, ye have not eaten bread, neither have ye drunk wine or strong drink, that ye might know that I am the Lord your God. He said, there's some things I did not give you. I didn't give you water easily and naturally. I didn't lead you to a well, which I could have. I didn't lead you to a place where there was food, which I could have. But I withheld those things. I did not give you those things that you may know that I am God and I am able to provide when there is no way to provide. You see, sometimes God will give us. Sometimes He withholds. And you know what that is? That's His plan. That's His plan. He said, I did not give it that you might realize I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God. He withheld these things that they needed that He might provide it miraculously that they might see their helplessness, number one. This is His plan. That they might see their helplessness. What could they do? No water. What could they do about no food? What could they do about no meat? Nothing. He said, I led you to a place of need to show you your lack, to show you your helplessness, to show you your weakness, and then to provide to where you could see who I am, that you might know me. It's one thing to say I trust the Lord when everything's running smooth. But when everything falls apart in your life and God miraculously gives you what you need, you can say, I know God, He's able. And that's what His plan was, to show them themselves and to show Him them Himself. And that's exactly what He wants to do in your life and mine. To show us how weak we are, how helpless we are, how worthless we are, how wicked we are. And He'll let us fall. He'll let us blunder. He'll let us make a mistake. He'll lead us to dead ends and dry holes and detours to show us how worthless we are and to move in a way to where only He can do it to show us how able He is. Do you get it? That's His plan. They need to accept His plan. He says, now here's the way I'm going to do it. You accept it or not, it depends on you, but my plan ain't changing. By the way, His plan for your life's not going to change either. We can accept it or reject it. We can accept it and appreciate it and understand it and submit to it and obey Him, or we can resist it and make it worse. And make it worse. You say, it can't get worse. Oh, yeah, it can. Oh, yeah, it can. I'm talking this morning about being able to go forth to war. Could I just throw this in? God provided the water, but they had to come to it and get it. And God provided the manna, but they had to go out and get it. And God provided the quail, but they had to reach out and get them and then cook them or eat them raw. So God, it disturbs me to say it this way, but I don't know how else to say it to get my point across. God did His part, but they had to do their part. In other words, they didn't sit at the door of their tent and God passed by and say, okay, here's your water today, and here's your quail today, and here's your manna today. They had to go out. In other words, in your life, there's some things you're going to have to do. Now, you got to trust God to give you strength. And you got to trust God to give you the desire. And you got to trust God to know the right thing. But there's some things in your life you're going to have to do by God's grace and by God's strength and by His enablement. But we still got to do something. That's one of the reasons why it's important to come to church, where you can get. You're doing your part this morning. I hope you're listening. That's your part too. And all this is God's plan. And He said, now this is my plan. I'm not changing it. It's the best plan there is. There's nothing any better. So accept it. And then lastly, talking this morning about being able to go forth to war, being an adult, being grown up, they needed to acknowledge God's promise. God had promised them, you got victory. I've given you the land. I promised you. And He's promised to take care of us, even in the day of the coronavirus. Even in the day of kooks in Seattle and everywhere else, in days of Biden being ahead, He's promised to take care of His people. They need to acknowledge God's promise. They need to appreciate God's provision, what He'd already done in the past. Should have given them the assurance they needed that He's going to take care of today. They needed to accept God's plan, God's working in their lives, and His plan is the best thing. They need to accept that and surrender to that. And then lastly, they needed to approach God's presence. I want you to turn with me to Exodus 17, something that's happening during the wilderness journey. Exodus 17. I'm talking this morning about God's choosing people. He's counting them up, and He's using one criteria. Who is able to go and fight? Who is able to go and fight? They needed to approach God's presence. Look, beginning in verse 8, Exodus 17, 8. During the wilderness journey. Then came Amalek and fought with Israel and Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go out, fight with Amalek. And tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. So when Moses up on top of the hill raised his hand, probably with a rod in his hand, Israel prevailed. They were whooping Amalek. But when he got tired and lowered his hand, then the enemy, Amalek, began to prevail and overcome Israel. Verse 12, but Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady under the golden down of the sun. And Joshua discomforted Amalek. That means he whooped them. And his people with the edge of the sword. We find here something these people needed to learn. They need to approach God's presence. What do we find here? There's a battle in the valley. So we find the people are warring. There's a battle. And friend, that's where we're at today. We're in a battle. And everyone is warring and fighting the same battle. Now, your battle may be a little different than mine, but it's the same type of battle. We're fighting a battle against the enemy. Our Amalek is attacking us and trying to defeat us. He'll do that in many different ways. Discouragement. Despondency, distraction. Now, there's no telling what he's trying to do in your life and mine. But one thing for sure, the thing that's predominant in this story is, number one, the people are warring, but there's some people who are praying. Moses is up on top of the mountain with his hands held up, which is a symbol of prayer. And as long as he holds his hands up, his side wins. The people of God are winning. And when someone recognizes the need to pray, listen to me, approach God's presence, there's victory to be had. There's help to be gained. But why? Well, because God hears prayer. And in this place, it's the man of God, the leader, who is praying for the people. But there's a problem. The leader is human. And he grows weary. And his hands, when he grows weary, begins to lower. And when he lowers his hands, the enemy starts prevailing. It's in essence a picture of someone who stops praying. And without prayer, there is no victory. Without prayer, there is no hope. So we find the people are warring and the preacher is weary. And we find Aaron and Hur goes up and stays up Moses' hands, so his hands are raised, so the people begin to win again. So my point is this, why was there victory? There was victory, you got that right? They discomforted Amalek, they whooped them, they won. God's people won the battle. Why? Because Moses prayed? Don't answer. Yes and no. They won because he did pray, but he got weary and stopped praying, in essence. So why didn't the people of Israel win? Because Aaron and Hur held up his hands? Well, yes and no. So why did the people win? Because they warred so valiantly and they did not give up. Well, yes and no. The real answer is this. All of the above. Moses' prayer, Aaron and Hur holding up his hands, and the people warring. It took them all for victory. And my point is this. Somebody needs to realize right now the importance of prayer. In the day we're living, somebody needs to realize the importance of prayer. And we need to realize, as your pastor, I cannot do it by myself. It wears me out. So I need your prayers for me. But we need to all do our part. Moses, yes. Aaron and her, yes. The people warring, yes. It took them all. It took everything. And if you take out any one of these three equations, there is no victory. Like never before, you need to develop a prayer life of just calming yourself before the Lord and talking to Him and worshiping Him and telling Him what you're going through and praying for your church and praying for your family and praying for your lost acquaintances and praying for your life and your light and your salt. To pray for yourself, as the lady just sang, that people might see Jesus in you. That God would keep His church together, that we would be closer together than ever before, that God would take care of this crazy virus and help us to get back to whatever's normal, that God would take care of this country, that God would take care of the world, that God would save lost people. I'm telling you, we need to develop a ministry of prayer. What did they need to do? They needed to approach God's presence like never before. We need to bombard the presence of God. And you know what will happen? He'll hear an answer. And He'll help. He'll help. I'll tell you what, I had a real bad day last week. And what finally broke it through was me just getting along with the Lord and just waiting on Him. And it's like God just pulled a cloud back and the sun got to shine it again because I prayed. I went to the presence of God and said, Lord, I need some help. I need some help. I'm going to tell you, in this day, I'm talking about being able to go forth to war. There is a battle ahead. We are in it. Being ready, being able for victory. We need to trust God and obey Him. And that's the important thing. It says this verse in 2 Corinthians, I'm done. 2 Corinthians 1:11. Ye also helping together. Ye also helping together. Ye also helping together by prayer for us. That's what Paul said to the Corinthian believers. And that's what I'm saying. We need to pray for each other and stick together. There is help to be had. There is help to be had. The verse said they discomforted Amalek and his people. But that victory doesn't come without a battle. Are you ready for it? Let's stand together.